Okay. So, Hanukkah Sameach again to everyone, and I felt it was appropriate this evening to address to learn about a perek, a chapter that we say, we in our shul have the minhag to say it every day during Hanukkah. Some shuls have that minhag, some shuls don't. It started as a Sephardic minhag and crept its way into the Ashkenazic Sidurim. And it also started out being said only on Hanukkah and crept its way into being said every day. So this parak is said every day as an introduction to the Psukei Dezemra, an introduction to the phrases of praises that we sing to God every day in davening. So I'm going to be focusing on its connection to Hanukkah more than its connection, why we say it every day as an introduction to Psukei Dezemra, although I do recommend a short article by Rabbi Eliyahu Monk in his book, The World of Prayer, which is an excellent book anyway if you're looking for insight into davening. It's written originally in German, I believe. It's translated into English, I'm sure, into Hebrew as well, called The World of Prayer. And he goes through all the tefillot, and he translates them, and he explains also there are very nice connections to why we say this parak as an introduction to our daily, to the Psukei Dezemra. Okay, so the translation I brought here, since I didn't love the translation that I usually bring you for this parak, because they inserted for this time certain perishim that I wanted to keep secret until we got to them. So I brought you the translation. It's from the Shiurim, from the Shiur of by Rabbi Avi Baumel, which is on the internet, which I based some of the Shiran, the end part, but I believe he takes it from a book by Professor Nachum Sarna. So I just wanted to give proper
recognition.
So while you don't have an exercise this evening, right at the very start, in the first pasuk, you should be asking this question. Good evening, Mrs. Singel. So wonderful to see you. I was hoping you would make it. Okay, Mizmor Shir Chanukat Habayit LeDavid. This is a Mizmor, which means a psalm, a shir, and a song on the occasion of what? Chanukat Habayit LeDavid. The dedication of the house to David. Or the house of David. Chanukat Habayit LeDavid. Which Chanukat Habayit do you think we're talking about? Well, we use the phrase Chanukat Habayit. The dedication of the house. What do you usually... Right, you usually mean the Beit HaMikdash. So when you read this first sentence of the phrase, what is considered Habayit, the house of David? This is the psalm that we sing for the dedication of the house of David. What's the house of David? The Beit HaMikdash. One problem.
He didn't build.
Thank you. Okay, he didn't actually build the Beit HaMikdash. So our first question, of course, is going to be, when is this psalm said for? When is it written for? What bayit are we talking about? Which Chanukah habayit, which dedication of the house are we referring to? And this is a possibility also. Okay. So even more so, but it strengthens our question because David himself is not building that one. In the time of Shia comes, unless he's going to be reincarnated.
Could it be any Mizrahim house,
any Bayit? Or could it be any Bayit of Hashem is referred to as Beit David. Right. So it's interesting because he didn't actually build the first Beit Hashem. So that's going to be the first question that we're going to be dealing with significantly this evening. What's that? Right, okay, any Shul also. Now our second question is going to be, is there a connection between, or what is the connection between the introductory phrase and the whole rest of the Mizmor? So let's go through the rest of the Mizmor. Aromimcha Hashem ki dilitani. I'll praise you, God, because you have lifted me up. You drew me out. Velo simachta oyvayli. You didn't let my enemies be happy, rejoice over me. Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, shivati elecha v'tipaini. I called out to you, and you healed me. All right? Real appropriate thing to say at a dedication. Hashem, ha'leita min sha'ol nafshi. God, you raised me from the sha'ol nafshi, from the deepest depths of my soul. Chiyatani miyar debor. You brought me alive from the lowest of the pit. Zamru l'Hashem chasidav. All of Hashem's chasidim sing praise to him. V'hodu l'zecher kadsho. And they praise his holy name. He regard the apo. His apo, his anger is instantaneous. It's very short. I don't mean instantaneous that it's immediate, but it's short. It lasts for an instant. Chayim birtano, but his desire for life is eternal. Be'erev yalim bechi, a man goes to sleep at night, crying v'labokir vina, and he wakes up in the morning, joyful. Mm-hmm. Isn't that an interesting thing that God has given us the ability to wake up in the morning, at least for a moment, and forget why we cried ourselves to sleep? That's a beautiful gift. The moment that he gives us before we remember. And then our trick the whole rest of the day is to get back to that moment. It's a little more difficult, but he shows you where you can reach. You know, it shows you, it's a, I know I have a very morbid bent in this class. Okay.
What are we, a ninth? Dead at night when we're sleeping?
A 60th, I believe. But that's enough for me. Okay.
Yeah, me too.
Va'ani amarti b'shalvi, I said in my tranquility, bal emot lolam. I'm never going to falter. I'm never going to trip. Hashem, b'ratzoncha ha'amadata l'harari oz. Hashem, in your will, you stood me up as firm as a mountaintop. He started up hanacha, but when you hid your face, ha'iti nidhal, then I was overwhelmed. Elacha Hashem, I cried to you, Hashem, I will call out. V'el Hashem et chanan, and I will beseech to Hashem et chanan, I will daven. Ma betza bedami, what good is my death? Beriditi al shachat, when I fall into the depths, when I die. Hayotcha afar, will the dust praise you? Hayagid amitacha, will they tell of your truth? Shema Hashem b'chaneini, listen Hashem and be kind to me. Hashem haya ozer li, Hashem should be my help. It's a Shema Hashem b'chaneini, Eilach Hashem echa, Tiel Hashem echanan. Shema Hashem b'chaneini, Hashem haya ozer li. I didn't make a tape, a CD this evening, because I thought maybe Jennifer would be here. But that would definitely be you know, the rabbi's sons, ring a bell. Very powerful song. Hafachta mispedi l'macholi, another powerful song that's been made from here. Hafachta mispedi l'macholi. You have turned my eulogy around into cheer, into songs of joy. Pitachta saki, you opened my clothing. It says here, unloosing my clothing, but sak is mourning clothing. So you opened my mourning clothing, but ta'azmini shimcha, and you clothed me, you wrapped me instead in happiness. Why so? Lema'an, therefore, yizamercha kavod, I will praise your honor, v'lo yidom, I will not be silent, Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, l'olam odecha, forever I will praise you. So we have two, really three questions here that we're going to ask. Number one, why, when is this said? Which Chanukah Bayit are we talking about? Because is it about the Beit HaMikdash, which is what we assume, but how could you call it Beit David if David never built it? That's our first question. Second question, what's the connection between a Chanukah Bayit and the whole rest of the Mizmor? The rest of the Mizmor is talking about some kind of illness that he had, that he prayed to Hashem, Hashem cured him, and therefore he will always sing out praises to God. So what's the connection between that and a Chanukah Bayit, a dedication of the house? And the third question, of course, what does this all have to do with Chanukah? It's a good question, right? That's my favorite. Okay, anyway, all right. So I have three sources on the bottom that address this issue of why is it called Chanukah Habayit LeDavid, David's house. So we're going to start with source number two, which is the Midrash. The Midrash says as follows. Lama Mizmor Shir. He asks the questions a little differently. Why is it called a Mizmor and a Shir? A psalm and a song. Keneged Beit HaMikdash Shel Mala uBeit HaMikdash Shel Mata. It's parallel to the upper Beit HaMikdash and the Beit HaMikdash of our world. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said to him, Af al pi shata meit, even though you have died, Ein Shemcha Yotzei MeBeiti LeOlam, your name will never leave my house forever. El al kol korban v'korban mezkirin et shmecha. But on every korban, they will not mention your name, but omrim shirim mishalcha, and they will say the songs that you composed. Havei mizmor shir chanukat habayit leDavid. Example of this is our mizmor. Mizmor shir chanukat habayit leDavid. Why does it called Beit David? Because Hashem says, you, David, will never leave my world. You will always have your name attached to my house. He continues, this is the powerful part of the Midrash. Chashav lazot mitzvah, af al pi shelo asa'a, na'ala lav hakatuv ki ilu asa'a. One who thinks about doing a mitzvah, even if you don't actually get to do it, it's as if you did the mitzvah. If you put everything into place, if you set the soup by the door to take with you to go to the hospital, and everything is set as planned, and for whatever reason you had to fly out that door and forgot the soup, it's as good as done, even though the person who needs the soup didn't get the soup, and you know it's not going to be so happy. But in terms of Hashem, maybe that wasn't such a good example. But here, let's use an example of the Beit HaMikdash. Teidalacha shekenhu. This is what it is. Shehari David chashav livno Beit HaMikdash. What did David do? He intended, he planned to build the Beit HaMikdash. That was his plan. Afa pi shelo bina'o nichtav bishamo. And even though he didn't build it, it's written, it's called by his name. It's called Beit David. It says, isn't that nice? I like that one. The Barachar, he says, Mizmor Shir, why does it say Mizmor and Shir? Lefisha Shtei Pamim Nimne Beit HaMikdash, because the Beit HaMikdash is built twice. So one, the Mizmor goes to one and the Shir goes to the other. Echad Bana Shlomo, Echad Bana Ezra. One is built by Shlomo, one was built by Ezra. Meaning the first Beit HaMikdash and the second Beit HaMikdash. Atach Mizmor Al Hachad B'Shir Al Hashani. So it says Mizmor on one and Shir on the other, reminiscent of the two Batei Mikdash. So why is it called really, it was really the middle explanation of the Midrash that answers our question, why is it called Beit David even though he didn't build it? He started, he put all the pieces in order, and even though he didn't actually carry out on it, it's considered his half. Nice, right? Okay. Source number three.
Is this
Ibn
true?
Ezra.
Is this true with any Mitzvah?
This is what the Midrash says. I don't know technically, because I don't remember from the last time I died and asked Hashem this question what his answer was. I don't know technically how it works in Hashem's Cheshvonos, but the way the Midrash presented to us is that if your intention was to do a mitzvah, if all the pieces were in place, and something beyond your control happened that because of that you weren't able to do the mitzvah, you get credit for the effort. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Something beyond your control.
Beyond your control.
Matthew had a list of 14 things to do, so that one fell by the way.
Correct. Something beyond your control. Your definition of beyond your control, though, might be, maybe that is a definition of beyond your control. There's a whole question there with women's chiyuv and davening. Because for a woman, if she was an anusa, the question is, if you overslept, are you still chayav to daven? If you slept past the time davening, do you have to daven still? Right? So the question is, why did you sleep late? If you slept late because you were off watching a movie the night before. Right, but why were you tired?
Kids all night.
Right, so that's the question, is which is it? If it's because you were off watching a movie the night before, then really, no, you're not... you're so high up to them, you should have gotten up and you missed your chance. But if you're up, if you're oversleeping because you were taking care of your children, because you were, you were at somebody's house till very late helping them with something, if there was really a good reason why you were so tired, because you woke up at 3 in the morning to drive someone to the airport, whatever, if there's a good reason why you're tired, then in that case, if you missed the Zman Tefillah, it's okay. It's not, I don't know, again, if God counts it as if you davened or not, but you didn't miss something that you should have done. It's not a miss. It's like I have with my students when I do my grades. Sometimes I have students who miss for illness. I'll miss like a week of school. For whatever reason, their friends are not as diligent as they, or for whatever reason, they don't make up all the work that they missed on that 1 week. So for a student who's very diligent and hands in every other assignment except for the assignments that she missed on that week, I figure out her average as if those assignments had not been given. And then I average that with her average that she actually gets. And that's the average. I give her somewhere in between. Because I want to give her like a little leg up, Because it wasn't necessarily her fault. So that's the same. So if you oversleep for a good reason, it's as if you never had the chiyuv to that.
You get passed.
Right, you get a pass. Okay, that's just an exercise. Okay, Ibn Ezra explains That it was, I'm going to do it out of Ibn Ezra. We can come back to it later. In the middle, he explains that this person says this and that person says that. One of the positions that he suggests is for Bayit Shlishi, you know, that we're talking about the next Beit HaMikdash, but he says that he has, David HaNasa had some kind of sickness, some kind of illness, that this isn't talking about the Beit HaMikdash, it's talking about the Beit HaRazim that he built, which is a house, one of the houses that David built, a palace that he built, and at the time that he built it, he was very ill, and Hashem had cured him. And then that's the occasion, so it fits very nicely into a historical context of when he said it.
What was
it? Ibn Ezra. What?
Do we know what he was sick with?
I didn't look up the stuff, but you can look it up. Yeah, I'm sure we can ensure that. Another suggestion, he quotes Rabbi Moshe, which could very well be his own father. It doesn't say who this Rabbi Moshe is. He quotes and he says that he was so upset that he wasn't going to be able to build the Beit HaMikdash, but that was the sickness that he had, that it was an emotional sickness.
Agmas Nefesh.
Right, in Agmas Nefesh. And then Hashem sort of helped him along and realized that it was okay, that it wasn't in his... Rajak takes it another step further. He says this in source number 4. Here's what he says. When did David say this? Chibro David sheyomruhu b'chanukat Beit HaMikdash. He composes to be said at the Chanukat of the Beit HaMikdash. Aval pi she'ein b'zah ha'mismor zecher avayit. Even though there's no mention in this mizmor of the actual Beit HaMikdash, he's kirbo slichat psha'a, but it mentions a forgiving of his sins. In other words, it's not a curing from sickness, rather a forgiving of sins. Because his enemies thought, shalot tekayim lo hamalucha ulezaro acharav la'ona shotu'avon, that his malucha, his kingship, would not stay forever and wouldn't be passed on to his children as punishment for la'ona shotu'avon, for the punishment of that sin, capital S, the sin. What's David's sin with a capital S?
Respect
Shema. The lo ha'yum, they didn't believe. Ki haben sheyulad lo me'otah ha'isha, that the son was born to him from that woman, yihi melech, that he'll, number one, be a king. Number two, v'yivne beit ha'mikdash la'Hashem, that he will build the Beit HaMikdash for Hashem. Sheyiyah makom slicha v'kafran, that the Beit HaMikdash, which is a place of forgiveness and atonement. Like, what a who would have thought that Shlomo, the child from that union, from that forbidden union, would be the one to build the Beit HaMikdash, which is a place of forgiveness. The Kevan Shem Lich Shlomo, when they make Shlomo king, they saw that it was true. He killed Koyshel. At that moment, the entire Jewish people recognized Kimei Hashem Malchut Shlomo, that Shlomo's kingship is coming directly from God. And even though he was born from that woman, then they knew that David was forgiven completely. That what's the cure for his soul? It's the forgiveness. Because everybody knows that until you're forgiven, you know that sickness that you feel. So it's the forgiveness. So we have four different approaches in the sources that we have. In the Midrash, we presented that what's the connection between David. We presented this idea that David started the Beit HaMikdash, and that's why it became known as his name. But we didn't talk about the connection between the title of the Mizmor and the contents of the Mizmor. That we did in Ibn Ezra and Radak. Ibn Ezra says that it was actually it fits into the historical context that he built this particular house when he was very ill, and Hashem cured him, and he was thankful to Hashem. And he quotes Rabbi Moshe, who says that perhaps the sickness wasn't an actual physical sickness, but an emotional sickness. And Radak develops that into what was that emotional sickness. It was the sickness over not being forgiven of the sin that he did, and which is the house that he was writing this for the Beit HaMikdash, that was the proof that Hashem forgave him for what he did, because it was built by his son Shlomo.
Oh.
You follow?
Wow.
Hanukkah.
Wow.
So now let's connect this to Hanukkah. Source number five, I found in a fabulous set of books. I think they're only like a little, two-thirds of the way through the alphabet in this one, and they've been working for years and years and years. It's called the Encyclopedia Talmudit. It's an encyclopedia that you pick.
One?
Emmy? Exactly. You pick any topic in Judaism that you can think of, and it'll quote you all the material that's there on it. I mean, quote you, not just list for you where it's found, quote you. So I found, so he brings this down, this midrash. He quotes as follows. The midrash Amro, this is what they said in the midrash, source number 5. Amar Rav Chanina, because I don't have the Pshik Tarabati in my house. So it's great, right? Like, so he quotes, actually, he says that the Pshik Tarabati is quoted in the Yalkut Shimoni. Now I do have the Yalkut Shimoni, but I didn't have time to look through, to start leafing through the entire Yalkut Shimoni to find exactly what I needed. So it's very convenient for me that he had this right here in his section on Hanukkah. I sort of knew I was looking for it, but okay. The Midrash Amru, here's what they said. Amar Rav Chanina, Rav Chanina says, B'chafei b'kislev nigmara melechet ha-mishkan. On which date was the Mishkan finished? In the desert, the tabernacle, in the desert. On what date was it finished being built? On the 20th of Kislev. Ashamakupal ad echad b'nisan. But they waited until the 1st of Nisan to actually dedicate it. Omeyatah, sit Kislev. But by the way, from then on, like Kislev, it's sort of fallen by the wayside. When did we commemorate the inauguration of the Mishkan? On the first day of Nisan, even though it was actually finished on the 25th of Kislev. Another midrash explains that the reason that Hashem waited for Nisan is because that was the month that Yitzchak was born. Like, there are all kinds of midrashim about this. But the Mishkan was finished on the 25th day of Kislev. But Kislev was lost because it wasn't celebrated then. So, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Alay L'Shalem. I owe him. I owe Kislev. Kislev is missing out. Mashe Leim Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how did he pay him back? Chanukat Chashmonai. The dedication from the Chashmonai family.
Hmm.
Okay. So let's learn the story of Hanukkah. Story of Hanukkah. Antiochus the Fourth is the Seleucid king, the Syrian Greeks. He comes in and decides that he's going to rule Judea, right? He's going to rule Yehud. He's going to bring Hellenism into Yehud, into Judea. The Jews there, by and large, accept Hellenism, are very happy to incorporate Hellenism into their lives, for the most part. Of course, not the part that's pagan and anti-Judaism, but the part that's cultural, part this philosophical, this concept of thinking about why we're here and what we're doing on this planet, like that was a very appealing thing to people. And people started being Hellenized. And then he realized, though, that there was this small thorn in his side of people called the Hasidim, who were really stuck in the tradition of the Jewish people. So he said, you know what, this isn't working the way it is now. So it's interesting, you know, that Judea is the only place in which there's any record of Antiochus IV forcefully implementing Hellenism by putting persecutions of those who don't accept Hellenism, because that's really against the Shita of Hellenism. Shita of Hellenism is you do what you want. You know, it's a melding of cultures. It's a combination of whatever the indigenous culture is with the Greek culture. That's what Hellenism is about. It was supposed to take on its own unique character in every place that it was in. It wasn't good enough for him in Judea. It's very interesting. So he puts all these persecutions, you know, Lo Lishmer Shabbat, you know, keep Shabbos. How do they ensure that they don't keep Shabbos? You have to be Mechal Shabbos in public. You have to eat treif in public. It's not just that you can't eat kosher. You have to eat treif in public. They instituted statues in the Beit HaMikdash. Why? Because Hellenism is, a combination of cultures. So your Beit HaMikdash is maybe the temple for your god, but, you know, we can put statues of other gods there. How did pagans worship their gods? Read the source by James Michener. He'll explain to you how the pagans worship their gods and goddesses. And that stuff was brought into the Beit HaMikdash, and they did all that inappropriate stuff in the Beit HaMikdash and on the Mizbeach itself. And on the 25th of Kislev, in the year 167 BCE, before the Common Era, 167, on the 25th of Kislev, a pig was brought as a korban on the Mizbeach. That's what happened. The Chashmonai family had enough. They lived in a town called Modi'in. The leader of the pack was Matityahu. He was the father. He was a Kohen. They were from the family of Kohanim. And the story goes that a Greek general or soldier of some sort came into the town and gathered everybody in the town into the center of town and said to them, you have to sacrifice this pig. And a Jew stepped forward to do it. A gun is held to his head. We had great discussions in my class about this, when are you allowed to, when are you not, and the gun to your head, and, you know, I thought there are certain things, you know, do you die for your religion, do you not? This is not one of the big three, right? However, in the situation in which all of Judaism is on the line, and the Gemara says, even if they tell you to tie your shoelaces differently, you have to die.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Well, if Judaism is on the line, okay. A Jew steps forward, Matityahu takes out his sword, kills him, and has to then run to the hills. Literally run to the hills. He and his five sons, Yehudah, Shimon, Elazar, Yonatan, and Yochanan, lead a group, small group of fighters whose chief form of fighting is guerrilla warfare. Okay, terrorism. They kill Jews who collaborate with the Yevanim. I mean, kill them. There's no tolerance there. Okay? And they fight this war. He takes up camp to the north of Jerusalem. The Syrian Greeks are trying to take control of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. They try to invade Jerusalem from the west. He kicks them out. They say, okay, we're going to invade them from the south. He comes around and he kicks them out. Finally, 3 years later, in 164 BCE, the 25th of Kislev, he comes in. Here we have source number 7. Source number 7 is the story of what happened. The source that we have, the historical source that we have on this time period, is found in two books called 1 Maccabees and 2 Maccabees. Those are the names of the books. Those books were written by Jews. They're written in the style of Tanakh, but they were not included in our Tanakh. Probably because they were written many years after our Tanakh was already closed by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. Just a time issue. However, they are included in the Septuagint as part of the Old Testament of the Christian Bible. Okay?
Right.
So I'm not technically giving you a Christian Bible piece to read. It's not from Acts or Romans or any of those things, okay? It's from Maccabees. All right? Okay. It's part of what we call the Apocrypha. Exactly. It's part of what we call the Apocrypha. And the Apocrypha, together with the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation, the original Greek translation of the Torah, and the Pseudepigrapha, which are books written like about biblical characters, but not really any substance, like nothing about them. So those are all included in the Old Testament part of the Christian Bible. Well, some Christians accept it and some don't. Okay, but all right. Here's the story. Then says Judas to his brothers, behold, our enemies are crossed. Let's go up and cleanse the sanctuary and dedicate it. So all the army assembled, and they went up to Mount Zion, and they saw the sanctuary desolate, the altar profaned, and the gates burned. In the courts they saw bushes sprung up as in a thicket, or as on one of the mountains. They also saw the chambers of the priests in ruin. Then they rent their clothes and mourned with great lamentation and sprinkled themselves with ashes. They fell face down on the ground and sounded the signal and the trumpets and cried out to heaven. Then Judas detailed men to fight against those in the citadel until he had cleansed the sanctuary. The citadel was called the Akra. It was a place right outside Har Habayit where a lot of Hellenized Jews had escaped there to hide from Yehudah HaMaccabee together with some of the military, the Greek military. He chose blameless priests devoted to the law. Understand that many Kohanim were corrupted by Hellenism. Many of them were Hellenized. And they cleansed the sanctuary and removed the defiled stones from an unclean place. They deliberated what to do about the altar of burnt offering, which had been profaned, and they thought it best to tear it down, lest it bring reproach upon them, for the Gentiles had defiled it. That's so interesting, but that's good for a discussion on forgiveness and moving past evil deeds and stuff like that. So they tore down the altar and stored the stones in a convenient place on the temple hill until there should come a prophet to tell what to do with them. Then they took unhewn stones, as the law directs, and built a new altar like the former one. They also rebuilt the sanctuary and the interior of the temple and consecrated the courts. They made new holy vessels and brought the lampstand, the altar of incense, and the table into the temple. Then they burned incense on the altar, lighted the lamps on the lampstands, and these gave light in the temple. They placed the bread on the table and hung up the curtains. Thus they finished all the work they had undertaken. Early in the morning on the 25th day of the ninth month, with the Chisholm of the Kislev, in the 148th year, they rose and offered sacrifices to the Lord Zevach on the new altar of burnt offering which they had built. At the very season, and on the very day that the Gentiles had profaned it, it was dedicated with songs and harps and lutes and cymbals. All the people fell on their faces and worshipped and blessed heaven who had prospered them. So they celebrated the dedication of the altar for 8 days and offered burnt offerings with gladness. They offered a sacrifice of deliverance and praise. They decorated the front of the temple with golden crowns and small shields. They restored the gates and the chambers for the priests and furnished them with doors. There was very great gladness among the people, and the reproach of the Gentiles was removed. Then Judas and his brothers and all the assembly of Israel determined that every year at that season the days of the dedication of the altar should be observed with gladness and joy for 8 days, beginning with the 25th day of the month of Kislev. Why do we celebrate Hanukkah on the 25th day of Kislev according to this historical source of Maccabees? Why? Because that was when they finished cleaning everything up, and it could be that they chose that day specifically because 3 years earlier on that exact same day it had been defiled. What's completely and totally missing from this very accurate, by all historians' account, telling of the story? The miracle of the oil. So now you ask the question. This is a story that happened during the time of the rabbis who wrote the Mishnah. Right? Around the time. Mishnah, the Gemara. Not the Mishnah. The other Mishnah. The Mishnah was finished in the year 200 CE. This is in the year 160.
300 years before. It's
360 years before the Mishnah was compiled, which means it's at the time of those rabbis who lived, you know. I mean, Rabbi Akiva saw the destruction. Well, he saw the destruction of the Second Temple, but Hillel and Shammai, you know, like they're around this time, right? The Hanukkah story. Where's the story of Hanukkah in the Gemara? I brought you the entire story of Hanukkah in the Gemara in source number 6. It's all the Gemara says on the Hanukkah story. And here's what the Gemara says. Remember, the Gemara is not a historical book. So when it brings this historical section, we have to wonder why and what's it trying to tell us. Source number 6. My Hanukkah. We were driving to the parking lot. My husband says, what are you doing? I said, oh, of course, this and this. I said, I'm doing my Hanukkah. Because you have to do my Hanukkah. I have to not do my Hanukkah on Hanukkah. So this section of the Gemara is called My Hanukkah. My Hanukkah, which means, why do we celebrate Hanukkah? What is Hanukkah all about? It's Hanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught. The Chasei, the Kislev, Yom HaZachanukah, Temanya Inon. Wait, where's my translation? Okay, this I got from the Steinwald Gemara, which is a really nice, clear text of the Gemara. Mm-hmm. It is frowned upon in many yeshiva circles, because it is not the Tzuras Hadash, as we say. It doesn't look like the original Vilna Shash, the original printing, because there's Nikud. It's all, like, this isn't exactly what's on the page. And if you look in a regular Gemara, there's much more on that page than just this amount. But it has Dats in it. And on the side, Rav Steinzel, so Rav Dean Steinzel wrote a little commentary on the side. So he says, Pachafei Kislev means, on the day of Hanukkah, Yomei Dechanukah, Temanya Iman. They are eight. You don't say hashbet on them. You don't fast on them. Which means it has a din of some kind of yanta. Why? When the Syrian Greeks came into the Heichal, into the Beit HaMikdash, Tim'u kol ha'shmanim shebeheichal, they defiled all of the oils in the Beit HaMikdash. Uchesha gavra malchut Beit Hashmonai. When the house of Hashmonai became stronger. You see, it says Malchut Beit Hashmonai, the kingship of Beit Hashmonai.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that in mind, because I'm going to tell you something in a minute. V'nitzchum, and they defeated them, but ku v'lomachu elapachachad shal shemet. They checked and they only found what? One vial of oil. Shayamunach b'chot hamosho kohen gadol. One vial of oil that still had the seal of the kohen gadol on it, which meant that it wasn't defiled. You should just know that there's no halacha that says that there has to be a seal on it. But it has, that you can't use any oil. Which is also why we Hidur Mitzvah is such a focal point on Hanukkah, why we light with the oil instead of with candles at the tan, and why, you know, you try to get a better path. They only had enough oil in that one vial to light one day. Nasa bones, a miracle was done. From that one vial, they're able to light for 8 days. L'shana acharet, for the next year, kibaum v'asha'um yamim tovim v'halel v'hoza'ah, they establish it, they set it up as a yantif, with halel, with saying thanks to Hashem. which could explain why we're, say, our Perek of Tehillim, because it is a Perek of Thanks to Hashem. We're going to connect it even stronger in a moment. Okay. Very interesting. The only mention in the Gemara is the miracle of the oil. What's entirely missing from the Gemara? Any mention, first of all, of our chief player, Yehuda HaMakabi, who led the entire rebellion. Number one. I might have failed to mention that before. Yehuda HaMakabi, after Matityahu died, Yehuda took control, and he led all the military. No mention of any military defeat, of any military miracle. No mention of the military. Only this miracle of the oil. Now, I said before with the Malchut Chashmonai, how to notice that it tells in the kingship of Chashmonai. After the story of Hanukkah is over, the Chashmonai family, meaning Yehuda's brothers, because Yehuda gets killed a few years afterwards in another run-in with the authorities, and his brother Yonatan becomes the Kohen Gadol, and then after Yonatan, Shimon became the Kohen Gadol, but somewhere around there, they also, Yonatan even already, he was also the governor of the area. And this started the Hasmonean dynasty of kings. We have a big problem because the Torah says, and the Halacha says, Le'yasur Shevet Yehuda, that the king of the Jewish people can only come from Shevet Yehuda. And here we have the king of the people coming from Shevet Levi because he's a Kohen Gadol. They're taking, you have this Kohen taking both positions of leadership that are available to him. And that's a problem. And that could be, it's a possibility, this is pure conjecture, as why the Gemara is leaving out that whole part, sort of as a censuring of what they did. Interesting, right? Remember, the Gemara is not a history book. Although the other day I was looking for a radio channel, I was looking for an oldie station. I don't know the channels in Detroit still, because I don't usually listen to anything in the car, because I like the quiet. But I, for some reason, was in the mood for an oldie station, and I'm flipping channels, and I find a channel, and it said a Motor City Moment. Oh. I said, okay, what's the Motor City Moment? I don't know if I found the right channel, if that was an oldie channel or not. Hanukkah starts this Friday night, December 15th. Sounds great. Jews light candles for every night of 8 nights of the holiday. I said, great. I had just finished teaching this section to my students. We read the section on Maccabees because I'm teaching them Jewish history this year. We're learning the Jewish history of Bayit Shemi. So we're also Hanukkah, at Hanukkah. How great is that? I didn't plan it. It's lucky that we had so many assemblies, you know, during my class period that I was able to get to it at the right time. But don't let my principal hear that, you know, because then he won't think that I'm serious when I complain that we have no class. He announces the reason they light the Hanukkah candle for 8 days. And he tells the story of the miracle of the oil.
Wow.
I thought to myself, oh my gosh. First of all, how bizarre. That historically, that's so off. Second of all, here I'm listening to the Motor City Minute. I didn't expect the Gemara to be quoted on my radio. But you know what? You ask anybody who knows anything about Hanukkah, and that's what they will tell you as to why we light it. For 8 days on the 25th of Kislev, when I just made the connection for you not 10 minutes ago with the Chanukat HaMishkan, right? Chanukat HaMishkan was on the Mishkan was finished on the 25th of Kislev. You think it's possible maybe that Yehuda Maccabee chose the 25th day of Kislev to connect us? Hashem says it. The 25th of Kislev.
So what's so incongruous about that?
About what?
About that the two events can happen at the same time.
Well, I think it was on purpose that it happened at the same time. But that on the radio, then what he's talking about is the Gemara
and nothing.
Blows my mind. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, so let's go back and make our connection again. The connection with Hanukkah. Why do we say this pack on Hanukkah? This is the part that was me, not the Avi Belmo stuff, this Hanukkah stuff, because I just did it with my students, so it was fresh in my mind. Why do we say this on Hanukkah, even when it's not talking about, when David might not have even been connected to Hanukkah, but, you know, when it's talking about Beit David, because all of Hashem's houses, there's something about, you know, the Soloveitchik talks about this cycle of time, a spiral. you have certain moments of each year that are set for something. You know, we talk about Tisha B'Av. You shouldn't go to a court case on Tisha B'Av, right? Or during the month of Av, you shouldn't go on a court case because it's bad luck for the Jews, right? Because that time of the year is a bad... Chaf Hei Kislev, think of it. The Mishkan, the second Beit HaMikdash, connecting, of course, with the first Beit HaMikdash by saying this Perek. It's like all God's houses being connected. It's cool. Okay, that was me. Now, Rabbi Naumel. Here's what he says. He says, you have to look at our Mizmor. He presents, he says, why are we talking about what's the connection between the beginning of the Mizmor and the whole Mizmor itself? I presented to you already the Midrash. We did the Ibn Ezra. We did the Razak. He brings in Malbim. Malbim, Rav Leibush Malbim, lived in the mid-19th century in Russia. What's unique about him in general, just as a short side point, is that his, if you want to know like the difference between words in the Torah, like why the Torah chooses one word as opposed to another word, he's the guy. Because he lived at a time when biblical criticism was very popular. Biblical criticism says that if the first parak of Bereishit was written with Elohim, the name Elohim, and then the second, well, then you add in Hashem Elohim, that means it was written by two different people. That's what they say. So if the different books, you know, you have the book of Vayikra, it's written in a totally different style than the other books of Chumash, so say biblical critics that the book of Vayikra is written by somebody else. What does he do? He shows you how every word is direct from God. So if you want to know the difference between Vayomer and Vayedaber, that's the Malbim. Okay, so focus on that each word is not a different style, it's all part of a Kadosh Baruch. So here's, he says, his parish here doesn't have to do with that, but he says something really cool. HaMizmor, he says, this entire psalm, Kulo Yusad Latet Hoda'a B'Chaloto. It's all one of gratitude about his recovery, V'yachi Michal Yo, that he was, you know, revived from his sickness, V'lo Nimtzavo Shuminyan Mechanukat HaBayit, but there's nothing in it about the Chanukat HaBayit. Like, it starts off saying that this is for Chanukat HaBayit, David. It doesn't say anything. The rest of the Mishmar. Umevoar, he says, it's clear. I'm going to explain to you. Shehabayit hamizkarbo po hu habayit hamishali. The house we're talking about is a metaphorical house. Hu haguf. That's the body. Shehu ma'on lanefesh. That it's the dwelling place for your soul. Ubayit laha'adam hapnimi hashochin v'dar v'kirbo. Which resides in the inner recesses of the body. The nefesh is who man is, really. It's his essence. The physical body is just a house, just a physical house for the nefesh to stay in the whole time that it's here in this world. The eight chala as rofefu amudei habayit umechonotav. When he was ill, when your body is ill and it's weak, that means that the house's foundations are weak. And after he was cured, nivna habayit altilo. They built the house again almost. The ashav liyamei olamav forever and ever. That the foundations were poured once again. And the soul could now rest assured forever and ever. He suggests, look back at the Mizmor. Look at number 7. Mani amayti b'shalvi, al yised in tranquility, I will never falter. He said, at that time, when you're tranquil, when everything's going well, you think you're on top of the world, nothing can bring me down, no problem. And then what happens right in the next one? Bistarta panacha. Hashem, right when I felt like I was on top, you hid your face from me. And then he goes back and forth. Also, you know, why should I die? But he has these expressions of death, and he's very, like, emotionally all over the place here. So at the end, when Hashem cures him, that's his, like, emotional re-pouring of the foundation, that his body is his neshama can now be happy because his physical body is happy. And he says, look at Hanukkah. That Hanukkah, here's his connection with Hanukkah. Hanukkah is all about the triumph of spirituality over the physicality. That the physicality was focused on so much that it was broken down, because that's what Hellenism, right? One of the focuses of Hellenism, one of the foci of Hellenism is on the physical, right? On the body, on the externals, and all that kind of stuff. So what better time to focus on the rebuilding of the internals than on Hanukkah? So that was his...
In Judaism, the soul leaves the body, and in Hellenism, the body leaves the soul.
Right. That's right. So, So there you go. So Hanukkah Sameach. Thank you again for your gift. It's been a pleasure, really, to learn with you this last semester. And I hope to see you next semester. And I hope you can bring your friends. And we'll have a lot of fun doing the Nechama.
When's the next semester?